I'd like to call the meeting to, I'd like to call the meeting to order. Mr. Crawford, can you please lead us in the pledge?
That'd be my pleasure. Could you please follow after me? I pledge allegiance.
Pledge allegiance.
To the flag.
Of the United States of America.
And to the republic.
Republic of the. Which is.
One nation under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Announcements of action taken in closed session. In one matter of discipline dismissal release, the board approved with 6 yeses and 0 nos for a settlement and resignation agreement with a certificated employee effective May 31, 2020. Voting for the resolution were members Allison, Crawford, Scott, Rasmussen, Davis, Boom, and Flurry is absent. Next, we have a presentation for distance learning in the foothills. So we have staff that's going to talk to that, right, Ms. Christina?
Yes.
Okay, I think we have Dr. Greco and Mr. Williams.
Can you hear me?
Dr. Greco?
Yes.
That's weird to hear, but yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Okay, and so while we want to certainly be brief kind of in this format, we went a little further beyond just the conversation of the foothills because we thought the whole conversation is encompassing. And why I think as a district, we have a lot to celebrate and what our people have come together and done. That is not to say that we do not have a ton of room for growth as with most districts across the state. So before we get started, kind of what we wanted to talk about was the difficult spot that school districts are kind of put in, and MJUSD has many of these issues compounded by the inequities that are already present throughout our society. And so when I talk about the inequities, what I'm talking about are the different situations that our students face. And so just to kind of begin the conversation, the difficulty of having students learn at home is immense, even in the best of situations. So what we rely on heavily in our schools, more than anything, and I think that's become clear probably to parents and everybody working in schools, is the relationships that teachers have with their students to motivate them to learn. If a student is 100% on track and motivated to learn, the difficulties aren't there so much because they're willing to seek out the knowledge. But in a lot of cases, we have students that are resisting the education either from circumstances outside of their control or for reasons that require teacher intervention or a teacher to keep them motivated or working towards what they're doing. So we face several distinct differences than some of the different districts that we are surrounded by. So the level of poverty that we have makes internet at home a limiting agent for some of our families. And this is something that Brian's going to speak to how as a district we're looking to address this. But this is one of those things that after surveying our families in the beginning and getting as much feedback as we could, we knew there was going to be gaps in internet service. And this is why when we were scrambling to try and bring stuff together, we created both paper-based and digital decisions for students to be able to have. So if you were to look up, talking to the principal at Yuba Feather, they had less than 10% of their families report that they were able to get internet access at a level that would have been able to allow them to do online instruction. So for Yuba Feather, they have moved to pretty much just paper-based instruction and doing packets. When you come down the hill, as you come down, you begin to have a greater level of connectivity. And so some of the schools are at 50-50 where they're doing digital and paper-based. Now, there's a learning curve in that as well, because as the teachers are presenting something digitally, that has to be able to be relayed to the school office to be able to be printed and put in some kind of form and then find some way to either allow for pickup or delivery for students. And so why that's happening across the board, there's definitely been delays in situations that we've tried to work through. But if you look through the connection of what's going on and the reports for motivation, reports for schools and what they're saying students are doing as they come together, we see good check-in rates or participation rates. Now, when we say participation, because of the criteria set forth by CDE and the state, what we're really doing is we're monitoring a check-in, not necessarily full participation. So when I tell you that like across the schools, we've had 95, 96% check-ins, or participation. What that means is that the students are checking in. We know they're safe. They're talking to their teacher. That doesn't mean that we're having completion of work by all of those students. And I would say that the number is lower. And as we begin to track, you see that number as we reach 2 months into this now, beginning to drop off. And so this is one of those things that as we move forward next year, we're going to need to continue to look for solutions. We're going to need to continue to look for ways to get better at bridging some of these different gaps. So poverty makes internet access an issue. And like I said, Brian's going to speak to that in just a minute. The location in the foothills is also the biggest thing. So as we were talking about at Yuba Feather, even if we're able to put a device or something in some of the family's hand, connectivity is just not something that we're going to be able to achieve because of the location, the trees, the lack of service up in the foothills, and then the cost making it prohibitive when it is available to many because of the limited providers up there. And I think the final thing that we're seeing as we drag into this part a couple months in is parent support. And I don't mean that from a not trying to support. I can tell you that I'm an educator. I'm highly educated. I'm married to a teacher in the district, and I struggle to educate my own kids at home. So with the demands of work, with the demands, we have a good situation. We have a calm household. We have fiscal solvency. We have a lot of things that position us to make it better, and we still struggle. So when you add all the factors that many of our families are dealing with, when I talk to parents, the biggest thing that I hear from them is, I don't know how to help them. I don't know how to motivate them. I don't know how to monitor. I can't be there because I'm working to make sure that they're online doing schoolwork, not the other types of work. So we still are going to struggle. And as this begins to look more and more like it's going to drag into next year, we're going to need to continue to work with teachers and sites in order to find the best ways. We have a survey that's about to go out to teachers as well as families, predominantly families with the first one to figure out what's worked for them, what hasn't worked, and how can we continue to fill the gaps that are going. The one piece I'm going to say as Brian comes on right now is the state has been very generous in offering lots of assistance, but slow in reacting to get that assistance out. So Brian had us on lists for hotspots. So these are little devices that bring connectivity to a certain range around them to allow for internet access and accessibility for some of our most disenfranchised students. So he'll talk about those. But even with that, that doesn't help us in the foothills. And then as we maintain those, there becomes a huge cost as we move forward. So Brian will talk a little bit more to that. But I think as we go forward, the big thing to celebrate is the flexibility of the teachers in these different environments, because many districts were able to just push out one solid platform and say, this is what we're going to do. Because of the diversity of our internet accessibility, we've had to be more flexible in that, and we continue to learn for it. So Brian, if you wanted to talk about the technology parts up there.
Sounds good. Okay, so I will say this, that in my entire career, the biggest challenge that I have seen is trying to get the internet to every student. Because there is geography, there's economics, there's so many different things. And first of all, can everyone understand me with my mask on? Because if not, I'll take it off. Okay, all right, there we go. It's always been the biggest challenge. COVID-19 has obviously made that a huge issue very, very quickly. So there are things that we have tried to do, things that we are working on, both in the valley and in the foothills. I'll talk about both. In the valley, we have a few more options. Both AT&T and Comcast came out with low-cost internet service, free at first, then $10 a month for families that qualify. And we have a number of them that do. It's not something that we could do for them, though. They had to go out and do that. In the foothills, that still applies, except for the fact that in order for those things to happen, you need to have, say, Comcast available, meaning they have to have cable in place. For the AT&T service, you have to have their high-speed internet, not just their DSL, but they have to have fiber in the area that's available to the homes to even have that as an option. In the foothills, we don't have that. Our providers don't have that. Primarily in our foothills, the providers are all satellite companies, and satellite becomes much more expensive. We have HughesNet, we have SucceedNet, we have Viasat, and I've looked into all of them. In order to get satellite coverage to a home, assuming they're in a place that has direct line of sight that they would need, you're looking at least $60 to $65 a month, plus probably $100 up front, and that's per student. So it becomes very, very expensive, very fast. some of the things that we are looking at, some of the things we've tried to do. I've kept the Wi-Fi open at the school sites. It's open from 6 a.m. until 8 p.m. Monday through Friday. It's open from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. I would have it open 24/7, except for the fact that we try to monitor that access as much as possible, because anyone who can get onto our network has the possibility of getting to things that they shouldn't get to. So we monitor that all the time, and we're looking at the firewall and the traffic that's coming across it all the time. I don't have staff to monitor it 24/7, so we've tried to make it available as much as possible, realizing, of course, that it's going to be a challenge for some families to get near a campus, realizing that the campuses are closed and there aren't bathrooms available, things like that. The least we could do, at least at that time, was to make sure we had Wi-Fi, and we bumped it up as strong as we can so it hits the parking lot, so it hits everywhere we can, to at least make that available. We have checked out over 5,500 Chromebooks to our students, which is fantastic. As soon as, I don't know if you saw, the CDE partnered with Google and they announced a whole bunch of hotspots that they were giving out. As soon as the form became available to apply for that, I put our name in. And just found out actually just last night that we have been approved for wave two of those. I had put in for 750 hotspots. Those will come with 3 months of free service from Google. Google's paying for the first 3 months, but then it's up to us, the district, to pick up the monthly cost for those 750. I put in for additional funding today to try to knock the dollar amounts on those down to about $10 a month. And I've already started telling my staff that we need to start driving the foothills and finding out exactly where we will get coverage on that. For those hotspots to work, we have to be in the T-Mobile cellular area. T-Mobile doesn't have fantastic coverage up in the foothills. They are working on expanding that. They are working on putting 5G up in the foothills, which should increase the coverage. We will be driving the entire foothill area to find out where it will work so that we can make sure we get those hotspots into as many students' hands as possible to make sure that we have internet access at home for as many kids as we can possibly get it to. So that's what we've been working on there. There has been a big push through the E-rate program to try to get internet to home as something that is eligible. It has never been so before. That's because of where we're at now and the way the E-rate works. I can't see that happening before the 21-22 school year, to be honest, so we're at least a year away from that. If that were to kick in and we could start applying for that with our current discount rates on telecommunication services, we'd be looking at 90% off of whatever the cost would be. So if it were, obviously, if we're looking at even at the, say, $65 to $70 a month for the foothills, if we could get 90% off of that, it would really open us up to some possibilities that we right now just financially can't handle. So that's what we're doing as far as the internet service, knowing that that is a huge deal. That's the biggest challenge that has been in my career since I very first started. And I'm hoping that there may be some opportunities in the future that we just haven't had in the past.
I do have one question. This is Randy Rasmussen. I don't know if it's for Mr. Williams or Dr. Greco, but do we have an idea? I know, Rocco, you talked about a survey that's coming up, but do we have an idea of how many families we're actually talking about? Are we talking about, you know, 30 families? Are we talking about 100 families that are having the issue with the internet?
Well, and I think, Randy, that would come, and Brian, I'm going to jump in for a sec. I think that would come in pockets, and I don't think we would be able to say from our surveys we have a full picture. So we have, I think Brian surveyed, it was close to 7,000 or 8,000 students. Is that correct, Brian?
Yeah, and it was, just so everyone knows, it was very, very quick. This all started happening, realizing we needed to know what was internet at home. I sent out a very quick form and asked the teachers to give it to all their kids and just say, do you have internet access at home? And just to give some idea on numbers, this is from kids, so it's not fully representative. They may have internet on their phone, but it's not to where it could really work for homework, things like that. But even on the survey I did with all the students, we had quite a few of them respond. We were at right around 90% that said yes. We're going to assume that's a bit high. The actual number is less than that. So if we've got almost 10,000 kids, 10% that are saying no, we're looking at least 1,000 kids that we're looking at, and that's probably on the low side.
Right, and I would, just to add to that, the irony of giving a survey for technology access on technology, even when it's at the schools, offers a selection bias on who's answering it. So when we did it again with the parents virtually, so they would be able to get it through cell phone or anywhere else, we had about 4,500 responses, and we were sitting closer to like 80, 85%. But I think in that now, when we resurvey, what we're gonna find out is there's probably a decent percentage of those folks that thought they had internet service that are finding the data heavy curriculums and things that we're using are too much for their internet service. So my guess would be, all things said and done, we're probably gonna end up having to offer some form of assistance to between 1500 to 2500 students to be able to get the level of access that we would want. And we're gonna have to prioritize as we go through that, because I think right now, without any further discounted rates, once the 3 months from Google runs out, I think we looked at close to $180,000 just to keep those 750 hotspots running for the remainder of the year. Is that correct, Brian?
Roughly, yeah, it's nice.
So, Rocco, have we broken it down by school? Let's say we take Dobbins or we take Yuba Feather. Of the 40 kids that we have at Dobbins, how many of those folks are struggling with this? Do we have that information, and do we know who those families are?
So to the specific level, in talking to the sites, we would probably need to get more information for me to be able to say an exact number. I would say right now, the further you go up, the lower the rate is. So Yuba Feather, like I said, they're probably sitting somewhere 10, 15%. As you come down to Dobbins, you've probably still got somewhere close to that range, maybe 20. But to get you hard numbers and actual names of kids, that's something that we could conduct through the end of the year with the sites, but we wouldn't be able to give you that specific level. When I asked the administrators this during the week, I got a response from each of them. And so the ones up in the foothills are saying that they've made contact with all of the families and they're finding ways to get things out, but that they're continuing to find internet issues. Other factors that come in along the internet issues, not even just the connectivity. So I talked to a parent earlier today who went out, spent the additional money to get it, and I believe for her up there, it was close to $100 at her location to get it. They've transitioned back to doing paper-based packets, just simply because the mom is more comfortable in helping the student. And so a lot of this, when we first looked, it was what will the teachers be able to do and make it the best? What are they able to learn for people that needed new skills? For students, it was, are they gonna have access, what platforms? But I don't think we necessarily considered so much what was the level of parent ability to actually be able to help them online on these systems. And so what we're finding is that that is also proving difficult. And when I talk to people who are dropping off participation rate right now, that's one of the biggest things, is I don't know how to help my student, and I'm at work all day. When I get home, like I don't necessarily even have the energy to spend 3 or 4 hours working on things with them. So if you wanted to get an exact number, Randy, like we could get that for you, but I wouldn't be able to give it to you tonight.
Well, I just think it sounds though like the site principals know the families that are having the issues, and we're being able to help those folks.
Yeah, so like at Yuba Feather, they were down to one student that they were still struggling with at this point when talking to the principal on keeping connection and checking in. But it definitely varies for site to site, and they are aware, and I could certainly give a presentation or send you guys information on what that's looking like at each site.
Well, I don't know if we need another presentation, but I just think, you know, when we're talking district-wide versus our real problems that we have in the hotspot areas, certainly we need to know who those families are.
Yeah, and that will be part of what we try to do on when we figure out how to check out the hotspots and prioritizing. Part of it has to be across the district, who has, and this is going to be the hard part, there's going to be a few groups that me and Brian talked about earlier today. So there's going to be people who are in a living situation that's so difficult that a hotspot probably is not going to offer everything that they need just because of the transient senior mobility. You're going to have a group of people that financially absolutely cannot afford the internet, and so this might be greatly helpful for them. You're going to have a group of people that have gone out and purchased internet beyond their means and trying to help their student, And then you're going to have people that, as we hand out hotspots to people, are going to want to jump on board for, you know, well, if you're providing this for other students. And I think that's going to be one of the things that we're going to be tasked with, is trying to figure out how do we spread what we have most effectively across the people who need it. And I don't think we have a solid answer for that. We have a lot of ideas on how that goes. But until we know the true level of need, and it may be that we have to do something paper-based at sites for each student to try to get that exactly, there's going to have to be some form of application process in that.
Thank you. Any other board members have any questions or comments? Not hearing any,
I'd like
then.
To get an idea. This is Paul. I would like to get an idea of who, you know, of how many kids do have access up in the hills, or how many kids are actually participating. But I mean, it doesn't have to be exact. It just has to be, you know, just send me something in an email.
Yeah, and Paul, we do want to get to the point of being exact, because I mean, even when you look at the initial MOU that was set up with the teachers, the wording in it at the very beginning kind of talks about this MOU will stay in effect for the duration of COVID-19 or no later than June 30th. So I think things continue to change, and the fact that it's looking like this isn't something that probably wraps up now as we go into next year, that probably we're going to have to continue to find ways. And hopefully some of the participation issues, I think, were based on the state's position on grading. And so I hate to say that without a reward or without the carrot of a grade, students can lose motivation. But some of those things that were initially put out with the state at hold harmless because of the equity situations. If we're going to continue with this in some way moving forward, we're going to need to find ways to make sure that we're addressing those and that we're able to actually give grades based on participation of work completion, not just checking in with the teachers, because that's a huge concern right now as well.
Well, definitely. I see my wife struggling with her classes, and she's in an area, I mean, her kids are in an area where they have access, not even sitting. So it's difficult.
It really is. This, more than anything, I think shines the light on the inequities that surround us. And it puts the districts all districts in a difficult spot who are dealing with students who come from poverty or have these struggles. And I think part of that is the fact that we are being asked not just to educate. I mean, we're still essentially, if you look at inflation, right around the same dollars we had in 2007. And we're being asked now not just to educate and take care of social emotional well-being and mental health to make sure families are fed, but we're also now being asked to reach out into the homes and bridge the technology gaps that are created by all these inequities in society. And that is one of those ones where it's a road we have to go down right now. But as we go down that road, budgets are finite, and the concerns of them shrinking, I think, are really there coming into this recession or into the future. And so what do we have to lose or take off in order to make these things happen? And where do we leverage to make this the best possible situation until we can get back to some semblance of normalcy?
It's a brave new world.
It is.
Hey, Randy, I have some questions.
Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
You know, we talk about, first of all, if we have teachers that aren't connecting with kids, it's not that hard to compile a list of who it is and how many people it is. From the teachers I've spoke to and the people I've spoke to in the hills, it seems to be about 1 in 3, about 33-35% of the people aren't connecting. So why is it so difficult that we can't email a packet into the print shop, have the print shop print those out, and send them snail mail, USPS, to these kids and get them something? We talk about inequity. We're going to get ourselves into a lot of problems with this inequity with lawsuits if we don't start giving these kids a way to get their schoolwork. And Brian, thank you very much for calling me last week, and I commend your efforts on what you're doing with the internet, the Wi-Fi, and all that stuff, but it's not going to work in the foothills. It's just not. So we've got to figure out some other way around that to get these kids the schoolwork that they need. And to me, it's not that difficult. And it's not that difficult to figure out who they are, because the teachers know who are connecting with them and who aren't. So I'm not quite understanding all this beating around the bush type thing to not figure out who these kids are and get them the schoolwork that they need.
Good question.
Good point, Jeff.
I mean, we're talking resistance and poverty. Well, if these kids aren't connecting, then why are we not sending these kids paper packets? Why are we not giving them a pickup place to pick this stuff up? And I understand it costs a lot of money, but we're also obligated to be equitable along for all students.
Well, and Jeff, I would encourage you to have some of those parents call me, because when we talk to the sites, that's not the message that we're getting. And I haven't had a lot of calls, or actually any calls on, actually, no, I've had two or three calls of people not getting it, but we're not getting the information that 30 to 35% aren't getting packets. From what we're being told, they're doing paper distributions at the sites, and that people are being connected.
This is some of the information that I'm getting from teachers.
Okay, well, and I would encourage the teachers to have us call us too and give us the names. I mean, there are lists for most of the schools when they're monitoring progress, but again, progress or checking in being different than but work completion. But yeah, if you would have to reach out, we'd be happy to help.
But isn't that your job to reach out to those teachers and ask them, who is not connecting with us, who is, and figure that out, compile a list and try and get a hold of those kids? And
I can certainly do that. I had assumed my job was to work with the principals at the sites to kind of filter that all together. And like I said, I've done that. So for participation rates, but if you would like me to put out an email to teachers asking them to let me know which students are having issues with picking up paper-based work, I can certainly do that.
Well, that's up to you and Mr. Cena, so.
Yeah, and it's, I'm sorry, this is,
go ahead, Gary, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I was just gonna share that when we're, the check-in, the participation rates, there's a number of reasons why a student isn't checking in. So we know the students that aren't checking in and then addressing their particular issues. And some of those students, have access, but aren't checking in for other reasons. So our position point is with the principals, who seem to have a pretty good sense of the pulse at, because they're working and checking with teachers. We certainly can double check and make sure that, if it's a paper packet piece, we've been real proactive with parents who call, and we're responding instantly to help address those issues. So all of this, that's why we have these discussions, so that we can work together to identify what the problems and the issues are and clearly define, if students aren't checking in, if it's an internet piece, that getting packets to them. We are committed, and the distance learning demonstration and practice this year, these past 5 weeks, have been, I think you can tell by the energy and the knowledge and the depth of passion that is expressed by Brian and Rocco. They're symbols of the teachers and administrators and support that are all working on this. And we're learning as we go, and we'll take this discussion and we'll discern even further and make sure that everybody's getting what they need.
Thank you, Gary.
Sorry, Jeff, you had a second question.
No, I didn't have a second question, but thank you.
Oh, okay.
So Jeff, or maybe this is for Rocco, you had mentioned about the MOU earlier, and it seems to me, I'm not looking at it right now, but it seems to me I remember reading in the MOU that our process would be from teachers would develop a list, I believe it was weekly, of students that didn't check in, and they would give that list to the site administrator, and the site administrator would then follow up to figure out why they're not checking in. Is that
correct?
Kind of an overview, Rocco, of that portion of the MOU?
Yes, and then from there, what's been going on as well is, so sites have actually used administration and then Jolie's office as well to go out and start beginning to do home visits. So if teachers haven't been successfully able to reach students or at least check in with them, then what's happened is the administrators, they're keeping lists in either Google Sheet. Some sites are doing it directly into Aries. They're running those lists of names, and then they're actually going out to the homes and trying to do it. So in some cases, for some of our most resistant families, just like we do with SARB, law enforcement, sheriff, and PD's office have agreed to go out to homes as well. So that's been happening, as well as Jolie's office following up when administration hasn't been able to get through to a student.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? I would just like to say thank you for all the work that you and Mr. Williams have been doing to try to reach out to every student that we have. So thank you.
We'll continue to grow. Thank you.
Next, we have comments from board members. Mr. Davis.
The only comment I have is that Mr. Fleury has been keeping me up to speed with how he was doing.
Mr. Davis, can I interrupt for a moment? I do want to let you know that this is open to the public. That any comments you made are heard by all the public members that are listening. So.
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay, I'm
sorry.
Anyway, go ahead.
And so he's, as far as I've heard so far, he has been stabilized. And that's as much as I've heard. And I just wanted to give a shout out to him and his family for the challenges they're facing. So that's the only comments I had.
Thank you, and sorry for interrupting you. Mr. Boom?
Yeah, I know everybody's working hard. These are difficult times, and I wanted to give a shout out to our teachers. Appreciation Week, I don't believe that we looked at this year that we didn't do a teacher appreciation item on the agenda. And I want to thank all the teachers, the principals, the staff, district office people that are working hard trying to, you know, work through these difficult times. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Allison.
Yeah, I'd just like to say thank you to the district for what they're doing. And, you know, my heartfelt, you know, good wishes toward Jim and to a speedy recovery. That's it.
Ms. Scott.
Yes, I would just like to say that I'm hoping that our students in our school district are doing pretty well with the distant learning. It's very new to all of us, and we're doing our best to get through this. And I'd also like to give a shout out to all of our teachers and our principals for their dedication trying to move this forward. And to the parents as well, because I know that this must be very difficult for them, and I do appreciate them working along with us. And I'd like to say also to Dr. Greco, congratulations to your new title on your name. Thank you.
Mr. Crawford.
None tonight, thank you.
Thank you. So I have one comment, and I would like to take the opportunity to thank all the MJUSD employees for their spectacular ongoing efforts to provide services to our district families. I also want to thank district management for providing guidance to protect all of our MJUSD stakeholders by implementing state and local public health orders. I, for one, am not willing to support any district decision that will violate public health orders regarding the safety of our MJUSD stakeholders. And my decision will not be swayed if other school districts decide not to follow the public health orders and put their staff and families at risk. Thank you. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association.
Hi, Randy.
In person graduation, because they're like, oh, we're open now, so can we have an in-person graduation? It's like, okay, that's local shit. That's not teachers.
So who do we have talking?
You're a voice, but it is not the president for the union. So hopefully now it's me.
Okay.
So Angela Siegel, president for the union, for the teachers union. And sorry, yeah, I heard another voice going there too. And so I was like, what is going on?
Angela, can I interrupt you just for a second? So that is kind of one of our challenges that Mr. Williams is trying to work through, is trying to make sure that whoever's wanting to speak has the opportunity to speak, and trying to keep the other conversations out, but it's a difficult task. So sorry for my interruption, and go ahead, Angela.
Not a problem. That's what I was just going to say. I would imagine our tech department is, even they're currently working overtime, because this is all new territory for us still. But Angela Siegel for Marysville Unified Teachers Association. And last week was, in fact, National Teacher Appreciation Week. And tomorrow is California's Day of the Teacher. And there are people in our community who feel like our teachers deserve more than a day or a week of recognition, particularly this year. I've heard from some parents and even some students, some former students even. I really wish that I could give all of the educators in this district the recognition and the praise, the honor, the respect that they deserve. Unfortunately, what I have to offer instead is very minimal in comparison to that, but I do thank all of them. Every year presents its own challenges and successes, but this one has definitely been unique amongst them. And so I do want to make sure that they realize that they are thanked and appreciated beyond all belief every day, but in particular tomorrow and last week as well. I do hope that the district finds, some small way to recognize teachers tomorrow. I realize with having to do things virtually, it may even just be an email or something like that. But I hope the district does something along those lines, because I know with the current situation we've all been going through since March that teachers would definitely view even just an email message as an attaboy and a pat on the back. So that would be helpful. Shifting gears a whole lot, I actually need to mention a very distressing and dire situation regarding administration at a site in our district. For some time now, actually for years that even I'm aware of, teachers at Lyndhurst High have asked for and begged for and pleaded for some help, for some relief from the ineffective and intimidating leadership that they're under out there. For at least a handful of years, I know myself that teachers in the union have communicated with board members and district leadership about these serious issues with the administration, and one administrator in particular, all to no avail. This year, a number of current and former Lyndhurst teachers, along with the union, have again met with and communicated with district leadership, again in the hopes of obtaining some relief from the intimidation, the sexual harassment, the retaliation, and the blame game. Teachers thought they might actually finally receive the reprieve that they so desperately had desired and wished for. Recently, though, they learned that the rug was pulled out from under them again. They recently learned that the administrator was going to be back at the helm again next year. And so in the very short amount of time since the teachers there have learned of that, we've had at least four long-term, high-quality instructors make the excruciating decision to leave Lyndhurst High School and Marysville Joint Unified. Teachers have already heard through the grapevine that this particular administrator knows the names of who tried to get him fired. And so teachers need to be aware of that he knows who they are. And just last week, we had yet another remarkably disgusting and insulting harassment incident occur involving people from Lyndhurst High School. And so I do realize, just like Randy, you just mentioned earlier, that this is a public meeting and it's being heard publicly, and I realize that. So I don't want to go into a lot of details in an open meeting like this, but I would implore and I would beg this board and this district to do something and to take some sort of action so that these teachers, this staff can have the relief that they deserve, and so that that high school can grow and become, you know, even better and better and better, and the teachers out there want it. And if any of you, any of the board members, the district, would like some further info or details on the situation, if you want details and specifics on the things I just mentioned, I am more than willing to give those to you. And so all you have to do is just give me a call. People have my number, but for board members, even though I know this is public, everybody knows my cell phone number anyway, and the public seems like. So my phone number is 530-218-3463. Again, I beg you to please call me so that we can get something done for these teachers out there. Some of you know that my grandfather's name is on a plaque on the front of that school, so I also do take it personally. But on top of that, I take this very professionally as the leader of this union and as somebody that these teachers have come to. They need your help on the school board and with the district leadership. They need your help. The only way that this is going to get better is with your help and your leadership. And so I urge you to please give me a call so we can have those conversations, because I do realize you need further info than what I just mentioned. So again, not to completely change gears and be really confusing in my comments this evening, but to change gears totally again, I do want to make sure that I close my comments tonight with well wishes for Mr. Fleury, and also with a thank you again to the amazing educators in this community and in this district. They do work that absolutely inspires me every single year and every single day, but in these last couple of months, they have just taken it to a whole different level. And so I want to let them know again and close my messages tonight with a thank you and an appreciation and sincere gratitude and immense respect. Thank you.
Thank you, Angela. Next, we have the Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. California School Employees Association Number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees. Supervisory Unit.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, same thing. We'd like to relay all of our energy towards Mr. Fleury and his family, and as well as a thank you just to everybody. It is difficult times, and I think as this continues to drag on longer and the view becomes that it may be longer and longer at this point, people are struggling emotionally. I know for teachers, I'm just going to say that my own doctoral work was on teacher well-being and the value that they get out of the relationship for students. Watching my wife and other teachers that I talk to at home without having to have that daily interaction, without being able to see their students, it's an emotional toll that if you've never been in a classroom, you can't really understand. But I just want everyone to know that, you know, we will continue, and this is difficult, and I just thank everyone for everything that they're doing.
Thank you. Let's see, Ross. Did we have anyone from Supervisory Unit? Next, we have public comments. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out a public comment card. Currently, the public comment cards are online under the board section. Before the start of the meeting, give it to the secretary, board president, or email it in. The public may address topics on the agenda during this section of the agenda or ask that they be heard during a specific agenda item. And whoever has the puppy dogs, can you mute your phone, please? Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per board bylaw 9323. The Ralph M. Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to the comments with the exception of clarifying questions. The California Government Code Section 54954.2.A states, no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that members of a legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights under Section 54954.3. We did receive one public comment last night from Arlen Ordaz. Is Arlen Ordaz out there? Looks like the person is not. So, and I see we have not, I have not received, Mr. Williams, no other public comments?
No.
Okay. Next, we have the superintendent's report. Mr. Cena.
Together, serving every student, every day, and every way. Congratulations to the class of 2020 for their hard work and their accomplishment. If adversity is the greatest teacher, then the class of 2020 is tempered steel. They were born in the shadows of 9/11. They, their freshman year, they had the Oroville Dam evacuations. Their sophomore year, the campfire. They endured through that adversity. Their junior year, the Paradise Fire. And this year, the public safety power shutdowns and COVID-19. They are, in terms of perseverance, patience, their character is molded. Molders of character, thank you very much to all the teachers who have extended themselves and went beyond capacity, building capacity, the middle parts of March and first part of April, gearing up for distance learning, seeking new ways to connect with students, and finding ways to engage students in learning these past 5 weeks. After 13 years of learning, our seniors are getting ready to graduate. COVID-19 presents a peculiar circumstance for graduation. Last week, we submitted our district's graduation plan. Yesterday, the Yuba Center Public Health Officer, Dr. Liu, set out specific guidelines that are shared by several surrounding counties for graduation ceremonies. That was sent to board members and is posted on our district website. We will meet with principals tomorrow and finalize the graduation plans and communicate with stakeholders. Looking to the future, a key focus, again, COVID-19 is slowing the spread of the virus is central, is our plan for 2021. We have our continuity learning plan, and we're developing a flexibility plan. As it looks right now, nobody sees a traditional opening to school for the 2020-21 school year. It'll be distance learning, like what we're experiencing right now, or a concept of flipped learning, where students come to school one day a week or 2 days a week, and the rest of the week is distance learning. And that when students, everybody who comes to the school site, everyone enters certain protocols, including symptoms checks, masks, social distancing. This is on the buses, in food service. And so how do we do this? And right now, looking to next year, there's more questions than answers with few resources. Today, we sent out the California State Department of Finance budget report. And as we're looking at next year, we're looking to a 4 to 5% decrease in funding. And particularly in the memo that Ms. Lossing sent out today, that according to the California State Department of Finance, the cut next year could be $11 billion to K-12 education, which, putting that in perspective, the worst single year of the Great Recession in 2008-09, it was a $7.4 billion cut. So this is $4 billion more than that. So as on May 12th, we are celebrating great accomplishments and great extended efforts. At the same time, we have giant challenges planning for next year. We have more questions than answers with scarce resources. And as an organization, together, serving every student every day, we will face these brutal facts and work together to do with unwavering faith to do what we need to do what's right for students.
Thank you, Ms. Christina. Next, we have the approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 4/28/20. Is there any discussion regarding the minutes? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Is that Ms. Scott?
Yes.
Ms. Scott,
yes,
second.
Ms. Scott.
Okay, roll call vote. Rasmussen, yes. Crawford?
Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
Mr. Fleury's absent. Allison?
Yes.
Boom. Yes. Mr. Boom?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Motion carries, 6 yes. Next, we have the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that board members would like to have pulled for discussion? Not hearing any, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve the consent agenda by Ms. Scott. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Davis. Roll call vote. Randy Davis?
Yes.
Mr. Boom?
Yes.
Mr. Allison?
Yes.
Fleury's absent. Ms. Scott?
Yes.
Mr. Crawford?
Yes.
Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 6 yes. Moving on to new business. Board of Trustees, Resolution 2019-20/30. Excuse board members' attendance at meeting of the Board of Trustees. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution to pay Frank Crawford for a missed board meeting on 3/16/20. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve. Jeff Boom.
Jeff Boom, motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second, Susan Scott.
Second by Susan Scott. Roll call vote. Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mr. Boom?
Yes.
Mr. Allison?
Yeah.
Mr. Fleury, absent. Ms. Scott?
Yes.
Mr. Crawford?
Abstain.
Abstention. Mr. Rasmussen, no. Motion carries, 4 yes. Next, we have personnel services. Tentative agreement with CSEA number 648. Purpose of the agenda item is request the board approve the tentative agreement TA between the Marysville Joint Unified School District and the California School Employees Association and its chapter of number 648. CSBA 648. Mr. Carrion?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. Good evening again, board members. We are providing information and an opportunity to ratify a tentative agreement with one of our final bargaining groups, CSBA 648. In the same fashion as with all other bargaining groups, this TA reflects a 2% increase retroactive to July 1 of 2019. Different than the other TAs is the opportunity for our CSDA 648 represented employees to earn an advanced degree stipend beginning July 1, 2020, or a bachelor's degree.
So it's a nice, very nice opportunity for these employees to continue their education and be continuous learners. Also wanted to enter into the record that since our signing of this TA, we came together and had an agreement that there was an error, oversight on my part, and the term of the agreement is extended to June 30th, 2022, not 2023, as initially presented. So to that end, I want the record to reflect that the ratification will impact the term of the agreement to June 30, 2022. So we recommend that the board approve the tentative agreement, including the revision presented here this evening, and we'll move forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Caron. Is there any discussion? If not, we'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Who was that?
That was Randy Davis the first time.
Okay, second by Randy Davis. Thank you. Roll call vote. Rasmussen, yes. Crawford.
Yes.
Scott.
Yeah.
Lurie absent. Allison.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yes.
Davis.
Yes.
Motion carries, 6 yes. Next we have Buildings and Grounds Department. Number one, a contract with George Roofing for the Transportation Roofing Project number 8103. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board award the transportation roofing to George Roofing and approve the contract for the amount of $82,998 with a 10% contingency, $8,299.80, totaling not to exceed the amount of $91,298.80. Ms. Lossing?
We should have Mr. Barnett.
Mr. Barnett?
On the phone.
Transportation. How's it going there? So what
Hi,
we've got
Barnett.
Going on this, how you doing? What we've got going on here in the transportation building is it's been leaking for quite some time. This is a critical project that needs to be completed. Currently, our transportation staff and mechanics are setting up easy up tents in their shop on rainy days. So it's crucial that we get this roof taken care of. It's going to be a re-roof. The 10% contingency is to cover any unforeseen items that might be uncovered when we start pulling the roof apart. We've done a pretty thorough investigation and, you know, scouring and looking up in the rafters to see if there was a lot of dry rot. We didn't see much. So we don't anticipate the project going much higher than the lowest bid. But as we all know, there are definitely unforeseen that we can come across during these projects.
Thank you, Ms. Barnett. Are there any questions or discussion from board members?
Yeah, I have a question.
Okay, we got Paul Allison. Go ahead.
Yeah, what kind of roof are they doing? I mean, this really doesn't, thinking about how big that building is, that doesn't seem like very much money.
A lot of it's going to be new sheeting is where you have to do it, your abatement and removing of the old sheeting wood that's up there. So it should be a composite roof that's going on there, but there's going to be a lot of demolition that has to be done on that building.
No, I'm saying that sounds like a really good deal. It's cheaper than the estimate I just got on my roof.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the beauty of when we get to put out for lowest bid. Yeah, our highest bid, as you can see, came in at $134,000. So as you can see, it just kind of depends on the contractor and who's hungry.
Okay, thank you.
Was it also Mr. Boom? Did you have a comment?
Yeah, when are they going to start this roofing job?
We're slated as soon as you guys, if the board decides to approve this contract, we'll put a notice to proceed awarding the lowest bidder to the contractor, and then we will start a notice to proceed as soon as possible.
All right. Thank you, Travis. Yeah, that's a roof that needed addressed for years. So good
Absolutely.
Job.
Thank you.
Hey, Travis.
This is Randy Davis. And the question I have is this in the existing maintenance budget for this year?
This is going to be funded out of a deferred maintenance, I believe. Let me look down here on here to make sure I'm doing it right here, general fund. So this is coming out of restricted routine maintenance. So yes, it was already allocated in our funds. We had our board meeting several months prior when we discussed projects that we were looking for the summer. So when we had that last board meeting and we identified these projects, we allocated funding towards them. So this has already been set aside and projected for this project.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do we have another comment?
Yeah, just a question. I'm sure Travis probably got an answer ready for me. Travis, what's our history with George Roofing, or do you know much about them? I have never heard of them. Are they a local roofing company?
I have not heard of George Roofing myself, and I haven't run into any projects with them, or I didn't see anything in our records that we've done work with them. But like you said, I've been with the district for 6 years, so it doesn't mean they haven't done work. I just haven't found anything. So typically when we come into new contractors like this, we just kind of keep a close eye, make sure that they knew our policies and procedures, and just keep following up with them. And sometimes when you see these, I call it a decent price on a roof like this, it's a company's way of kind of getting their foot in the door to show us what they're made of. So hopefully we'll they'll get their name out there and give us a good product.
Yeah, my concern was that this disparity in from George Roofing to Madsen Roofing and Waterproofing. I respect the low bid, but that I'm sure that includes waterproofing and everything else from George, right?
Yes. Yeah, so everything's got to meet building standards and codes. So we have, we'll have our guys out there watching. But yes, it includes all waterproofing, things like that. They still have to hit all building codes for a re-roof. So they're not going to leave us standing with a product that's not working. And we also hold retention on projects as well to make sure that we're completely satisfied before releasing all funds when the project's complete.
Thank you, Travis.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Lossing, did you want to ask?
No.
No. Oh, I'm sorry. That's okay.
I'm just getting ready for the next item.
Oh, okay. My apologies. Any other discussion on that item? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion approved by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Second.
Second by Ms. Scott. Roll call vote. Rasmussen, yes. Crawford?
Yes.
Scott? Scott?
Yeah.
Fleury's absent. Allison?
Yes.
Boom?
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
Motion carries 6 yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barnett. Next, we have business services. Resolution 2019-20/31. Adopting developmental fees on residential, commercial, and industrial development to fund the construction or reconstruction of school facilities. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing to approve the April 2020 developer fee justification study and the resolution to institute a level one residential developer fee. Mrs. Lossing?
Good evening, board members. This is Penny Lossing. And this item may look familiar because it comes up every couple of years. In January of this year, the State Allocation Board approved an increase to level one developer fees. Residential fees are going from $379 to $408, an increase of 29 cents per square foot. The commercial and industrial fees are going from 61 cents to 66 cents. An increase of 5 cents per square foot. In order for MJUSD to collect this increase in fee amounts, we must demonstrate the need for the increase in fees. Previously, the most recent developer fee justification study was board approved in 2016. A new study has been completed in April of 2020, and the new study demonstrates the need for the district to collect the higher fee amounts. Just for your information, some of the data analyzed in the study are enrollment projections, student generation factors, new residential development projections, existing facility capacity, classroom loading standards, new construction and reconstruction costs. Analyzing this data resulted in a calculation of new development's fiscal impact on our schools. And the summary of residential impact results in a residential fee justified of $5.54 per square foot, which is more than the maximum state allowed amount of 408. Therefore, we are justified in collecting the new maximum amount of 408. And so, if there aren't any questions, I can read the recommendation.
Yeah, Penny, this is Jeff, but I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, this was finished in January 22nd of this year. And with everything that changed since then, and the economy the way it is, it's going to make it tougher for people to build, people to develop, you know, build houses, build businesses and stuff. Is this something that we really want to go forward with at this time and increase fees on people when times are already tough? And I understand the need for schools, but
right.
If people can't build, then we're not going to get those students anyways. And it just makes that much more of a burden on them. I mean, things have changed. I mean, things have changed 180 degrees since this was done. So, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, we had just received the new developer, the housing, the residential housing projections from Kevin Perkins at the Yuba County Planning Department just probably in March. And that was for 2,000 new homes in the next 5 years within our district. Mm-hmm. And the other, the state allocation board did the approval for the increase in January, and actually our justification study was just completed in April, based on, you know, the enrollment projections and so forth. And I realize that the COVID-19 can be, you know, we just don't know what the future holds. And so I think in my mind, I was hoping to get everything that the district can to help mitigate the impact of additional portable classrooms and, you know, whatever else the requirements will be. It could be that we end up a go-to place because of the low cost of living here as well. I mean, we just really don't know as far as, right. You know, the number of students to speculate. So I think that the increase amount was, it's 29 cents a square foot. So it's not substantial. I just, in my opinion, I just kind of hate to give up any additional costs that'll help us with our facility needs. Having 23 sites is a lot of facility needs for our district. And, so I guess that would be, and I certainly appreciate you bringing forward the concern and the thought, but I believe in my recommendation that I would recommend that we go ahead and receive the maximum. Because again, what the study just showed was we would really need $5.54, and the state maximum amounts of $408. So we're already having that discrepancy.
And Jeff, one way to look at it too is at $290 per 1,000 square feet. So for a regular house, it's $500 more. And when you're paying $300,000 for a house,
yeah.
It's not that much for someone to, you know, see.
No, I understand, Paul. The math is like $580 on a 2,000 square foot home. So I understand
Or more, $580 more.
Putting that out there because it's going to be so tough on people right now.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
and to increase taxes on anybody is really hard to do right now. But I understand wholeheartedly that, you know, our schools need money. So,
well, I think one thing too is the people that are buying the houses are the ones that can afford them.
Yeah, that's built into it. You're right.
Is there any other discussion? If not, we'll need a motion to close the public hearing. Is there a motion?
Motion to close.
Motion to close the public hearing by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Davis. Roll call vote. Davis.
Yes.
Boom. Boom.
Yes.
Allison.
Yes.
Larry's absent. Ms. Scott.
Yes.
Crawford.
Yes.
Rasmussen. Yes. Motion carries 6 yes. It looks as though we actually have two separate motions regarding this item. So the first motion would be to have to do with or regarding the study. Is there a motion regarding the study?
Motion to approve the study.
Motion to approve the study. Was that Mr. Boom?
Yes.
Motion to approve by Mr. Boom. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Davis. Roll call vote. Rasmussen. Yes. Crawford.
Yes.
Scott.
Yes.
Absent Mr. Fleury. Allison.
Yes.
Boom.
Yes.
Davis.
Yes.
Motion carries 6 yes. Looks as though we also need a motion regarding the resolution. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve resolution.
Motion to approve the resolution by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Second by Ms. Scott. Roll call vote. Davis.
Yes.
Boom.
Yes.
Allison.
Yes.
Larry's absent. Scott.
Yes.
Crawford.
Yes.
Rasmussen. Yes. Motion carries 6 yes. Item number two, we have the RFP authorization, financial advisory services. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board authorize the district to request proposals for financial advisory services. Mrs. Lossing?
Yes, this is an opportunity with the current contract for our financial advisors expiring June 30th of this year. And so I wanted to formally solicit for bids that will give us the best possible advisors, well qualified, and for the best price for the district. There are different ways that financial advisors charge. And so I just think this is a good opportunity to look at qualified firms and see their price, how they price their services. And especially because, as you know from previous presentations, we have our certificates of participation, the first annual payment coming due in 2023. That will, when we adopt the budget in June, that will hit our three-year multi-year projection, and so we'll see that officially come June with this next budget adoption. And so the thought would be to use our new financial advisors as the folks that will help us get the best deal on refinancing, also known as refunding the certificates of participation. And it's my understanding that we, on the $2.8 million payment, we may be able to realize a savings of several hundred thousand dollars a year. So it's going to be a very important service that the firm provides, and I believe the RFP process is the best way to choose the best firm for us.
So, Penny, what does this cost us?
I'm sorry? How much does it
cost us? I'm looking in here for compensation, and I couldn't find what this cost us.
Well, it'll be determined by what they show in their proposal. I know that some financial advisors will charge I'm not sure the term is correct, but a percentage of the amount that's financed. And then others can be on a time and material, like an hourly rate.
Right.
And I think I get concerned on, getting the best advice for the district, not dependent on how much money the financial advisor will make based on what they recommend to us. So it'll all be part of the proposals, their fee structures, and so we'll be able to look at those and choose what we feel will be the best for the district. But
well,
I don't really know until we get the proposal. Pardon?
They charge us for the proposal, right?
No. The proposals will be done at their cost, and then we'll receive them and have an evaluation criteria, of which part of that will be their fee structure.
Okay.
Cost.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Penny, Frank Crawford.
Hi, Frank.
How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
I was just wondering, have you been satisfied with our current consultants, or are happy, or is this a reflection on them, or just something you want to open up wide for a better bang for the buck?
You know, it's absolutely not a reflection on the current advisors. It's just that these are typically contracts for a period of a number of years. I believe this RFP is for 3 years. And so it's always a good idea to take a look and see, you know, what other qualified firms have to offer. And so I would expect that our current advisors would also present us with a proposal, and I hope that they do.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Penny, this is Andy Davis, and I just wonder what the current cost of these consultants are.
Oh, you know what, Mr. Davis? They don't charge us for them. It's part of their marketing. They would give a proposal to any school district that asks in the hope that we choose them so that then they can charge us for their services. But just to get the proposal, it won't cost us anything.
Okay, you misunderstood me.
What
does these financial advisory services cost the district now?
Well, it depends on what we use them for. There currently is just, I believe, a minimal cost to maintain the reporting on our bonds. And there's always after the fact reporting and monitoring. And so there's an associated cost with that that's typical of any bond issuance. And other than that, there hasn't been any charge for anything since I've been in the district. It would typically depend on what we ask them to do. If we were to ask them, and the proposal to be looking very closely at how they would charge for refinancing the certificates of participation. So then we'll be able to compare what the cost of the various qualified firms are before we choose who we would have provide those services for us.
Thank you.
So, Penny, who's our advisor right now?
The name is KNN Financial Advisors, and I believe their headquarters is in Southern California. Mr. Cena, Mr. Carrion, and I have met with them, I don't recall, maybe 3 months ago.
They were the same people that were up here a couple of years ago when we were looking at the bond that we were going to do in 2018.
Right? I believe so.
Well, out of curiosity for Mr. Davis, how much did that cost us?
I would have to check that. Sometimes
it doesn't have to be exact.
You know, sometimes they only receive compensation if they perform a particular service. So if
they must have had a lot of expenses. They came up there and stayed for a while and made a presentation to the board. I mean, they didn't charge us for that.
You know, sir, I would have to check on that for you, and I could certainly get you that information. I don't have it right now.
Just curious. You don't have to break your back doing it.
I'd be glad to get you that information.
So, Ms. Lossing, maybe you could just email that information to the board members when you receive it or when you identify it?
Yes.
Thank you. Any other questions? Go ahead.
Yeah. So, Penny, if I'm understanding this RFP, when we do it, you're not necessarily looking for a low bid. You're looking for the best cost for the best services that we get.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
And sometimes the fee structures are different. So you have to weigh, you know, an hourly fee versus, you know, what the financial advisor would receive as part of the service they provide, like not a percentage, but kind of like a percentage of it. So we'll have to weigh the different fee structures that we receive.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions or discussion? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
We have a motion to approve by Mr. Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Crawford. Did I have that motion correct? Was that you, Mr. Davis?
Yes, it was.
Okay, thank you. Roll call vote. Rasmussen, yes. Crawford?
Yes.
Scott?
Yeah.
Larry's absent. Allison?
Yes.
Boom.
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
Motion carries, 6 yes. It looks like our last agenda item. I would like to thank all the board members for your help and support through this process, and have a good night.
You too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
good night, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good night, everybody.